Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
So kids today are growing up in a world of anxiety, screens, pressure, comparison, and constant noise. And honestly, parents are trying to survive it all too. So today we're talking about how to raise children who just don't cope in the world, but they actually thrive in it. So today's episode is for every parent who has ever Googled, "Am I screwing up my child?" at 2 a.m. Because parenting today feels like trying to assemble IKEA furniture emotionally without the instructions. And thankfully, Dr. Gloria Vanderhorst is back to help us make sense of it all. And so Dr. Gloria Vanderhorst is a psychologist with over 50 years of experience helping children, parents, couples, and families build healthier emotional lives and stronger relationships. So Dr. Gloria, it's so good to see you again. Happy belated birthday. Thanks so much for being here today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's exciting.
I learned something new about
here.
You today.
I love having conversations with you.
Yeah, I learned
it's
something about
here.
You today. You're a Taurus.
That's right. That's right. Which means I'm persistent and bullish. I don't take no
again,
for an answer. Kind of like
amazing.
A little kid, right? Little kids don't take no for an answer either.
That's a fact. That's a fact. So I would love to ask you this. Do you think kids today are struggling more emotionally, or are we just finally talking about it more openly?
Well, I think both are happening. We're definitely talking about it more openly, but I do see that children are struggling more. Younger and younger, the angst in childhood used to happen with adolescence. Kids prior to adolescence were not showing up in the psychiatrist's office. They're not really showing up in therapy with any great presence at all. It was the teen years, you know, 20 years ago, it was a teenager that would show up in your office, not a first grader in your office. And now there are just many more families struggling with emotional issues with their children at a much earlier age, a much younger age. And I think with artificial intelligence, that's also going to increase because we are pressured to perform. We are now pressured to get the right answer, right? I was at lunch today with a group of 3 other women. And we're just chatting about a variety of different things. And then someone asks a question and one of them pulls out their phone and taps to AI to get an answer to that question. Now, decades ago, nothing like that. You know, people didn't carry their encyclopedia around with them, but we are all just fascinated with what's AI going to tell me about this. And then we kind of fall into the trap of believing it. And many times I think it's on target and accurate. But think about that pressure for a young child, an elementary school age child. The message that we're sending unintentionally is that everything has a really good answer to it, right? Everything can be solved. Everything can be figured out. Right? You can't have kind of a range of ways to respond in a situation. And young kids have a broad range of ways to respond in every different situation. And we're narrowing them, right? We're basically implying, if we don't tell them directly, that in every situation, there is a right answer. And you better find it. Well, that's tremendous pressure. That's tremendous pressure for a child, right? Particularly prior to puberty, because prior to puberty, children are thinking concretely, right, wrong, good, bad, up, down. They can't think in nuances. They're thinking in absolutes. So if we train an elementary school and middle school child to think that there's always an absolute direction to move in, we're going to see a lot more distress. And that's what's happening, we're seeing a lot more distress. We're seeing kids in preschool, first grade, second grade, taking medication for emotional issues, not just attention deficit, right? We're seeing depression and anxiety in these kids, whereas decades ago, they would not have been narrowed into expectations that put that kind of pressure on them.
Yeah, my brother and his wife, they have two kids, but the oldest, he's in preschool, and we were there for Christmas, and my parents, I remember someone saying to him, it was one of my parents, a grandma or grandpa said, "You're so smart, Zachary." And my brother said, took them aside and said, "We don't say that to Zach. We like to tell him that he's doing a good job," because they're trying to teach him that being smart isn't the end goal, that whatever he's doing is good enough.
Right.
So yeah, there's language, the language that we use, AI, expectations, these are all things that are factors in the way that children are being raised.
Yeah, so they just took away kind of the variety of responses that he could get from anyone. Why would he be narrowed into every response has to take this form and be this language? That's going to be eventually overwhelming. And we're doing that to kids all over the place, right? Not just to your nephew, but we're doing it to kids all over the place. And then they get discouraged. That's the other thing that we're seeing. Kids used to be motivated to be successful in elementary school, to be proud of themselves, to compete with the person at the table next to them, right? To want to please the teacher. And now with the rigidity that you have to fit into this narrow slot, it's too hard. It's too hard. All right. You wouldn't want to do it as an adult. I don't want to do it as an adult. Do I want to say, you know, I have to be in this really narrow range of performance as a psychologist? No, I want a broad range, right? I want flexibility, right? I want variety. But, you know, if I get narrowed down to there's only one comment that we can make about his activity, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I agree. So is this, like, besides AI, what makes raising children today so different than it was 20 or 30 years ago?
Well, I think there's been a definite change in the structure of education. I love the idea if we could make dramatic changes in education of having a male teacher and a female teacher in every classroom, right? Because life is, you get exposed to male perspective and female perspective. The majority of our teachers are female, so our kids only get exposed to female perspectives. So I'd love to create that change. But one of the other things that's happening all over the country is that the public school system is no longer the go-to system. Children are moving into charter schools all over the country. Now, that's still a publicly supported endeavor, but you must qualify. All right. You must have a particular IQ or grade average. All right. You must be more motivated than the child that's going to stay in the public system. So we're separating our education and we're sending the message to kids that don't qualify for that next tier of education that they're less than. And we never used to send that message, right? Everybody was pressured, if you will, required to meet the standard in the classroom. And you were helped to get there and challenged to get there if you were struggling. Yes, you got some extra help if you were struggling, but you weren't separated from your other peers, right? So you were always challenged. You were always exposed to what's everybody else doing in the room. And now we're making the public system actually just service those that are less functional rather than the broad range of functionality. And that's going to hurt us in the long run.
What is that going to do?
Well, I think that we're seeing it in cities all over the place. I'm outside of Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. has had to put a curfew on middle school teenage kids getting together, all right? Because they get together in large groups and they don't do anything productive. Right. It's not like they're challenging themselves to play games. They're not organizing anything. They're just running around and being disruptive and enjoying doing that. So kind of all over downtown, we have lots of eateries, for example, that have outside tables, streets full of them. Right. So if you get 20 teenagers running around and tipping over glasses and yelling and screaming and throwing baseballs back and forth, right, is disruptive to the culture as a whole. And so I think that's really the outcome that we're seeing, is that our kids don't have purpose.
Yeah, and they're literally screaming for help. Like, that's what they're doing by acting out, screaming for help.
Right. They are definitely screaming for help. They want to be functional, but we're not providing that for them. And we're definitely not really providing challenge for them in the educational system.
So my city, the premier, I'm in Canada, so it's different language. He is looking at banning social media for kids. I don't know how he would implement that, but it was literally in the news. And I think that's an interesting take. I mean, it's going to cause a lot of division. And I know as a kid, if I was told I wasn't allowed to do something, I would still figure out a way to do it.
Right.
But it's an interesting play. It's an interesting take, because I do think that our devices that we use all the time are part of the issue as well. 30 years ago, I mean, I didn't have a phone. I was told to go play outside, you know, play with the animals and go run and be creative.
And interact with other people and make up things and problem solve, right? And discover things.
You hit the nail on the head, interact with other kids, communicate, interact, play. And now kids aren't doing that as much these days.
No, the interaction is over a device, right? So they're playing games with each other, but they're playing, and most of those have a violent theme to them.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing that we're doing. At very young ages, we are training our children to have a completely different attitude towards aggression and violence, that it's the norm, that it's play, right? That this is a game I'm engaged in. And I will tell you, violence is not a game. It is not play material, but we are training our kids to either find aggression in themselves or numb themselves to the impact of aggression. And neither one of those endpoints is healthy for any of our children. So we're headed in a pretty difficult direction. And it's, you know, to take a country and say, at the educational level, we're going to remove devices from all the children so that they can't have access, is an incredibly bold move. But I can, in my heart, really understand the passion to rescue a whole group of children from being put in a situation where their brains get pickled in just taking aggression as, oh, that's normal fare. That's, you know, that's no big deal for people to shoot each other or bonk each other on the head or strangle each other or do aggressive acts towards each other.
Yeah, their developmental phase of learning is so crucial when they're younger, and being subjected to that and seeing that all the time. They're not having the opportunity to develop that brain. And they definitely won't be able to think critically. Our world definitely is headed for some scariness in a few years, for sure. But then there's the parents. So there's the parents. What are some parenting moments that almost every parent experiences, but no one really talks about openly and honestly, do you think?
Yeah, I think one of the things that happens for all parents is that we provide no education for how to be a parent, right? So you become a parent without a knowledge base. And if you want to educate yourself, you can do that. There are wonderful books out there that you can use to educate yourself. But if you don't want to educate yourself, right, you have to get a license to drive a car. You don't have to have a license to have a child or have multiple children or to be responsible for caring for them or raising them or teaching them social norms. So we have disappointed the next generation because that teaching used to take place in the house and it doesn't take place in the house anymore. All right. We come from a generation where there was a parent staying home and educating the children about social norms and about behavior and about respect. Well, mom and dad are out working.
Mm-hmm.
And they come home tired, mm-hmm. right? And they come home after a very long day. So the best that they can do is to get dinner on the table and maybe play a game or watch a television show and then put the kids to bed. So all of that social training that used to take place in the home doesn't take place anymore. And so it's natural that the kids gravitate to machines because the personal interaction is not available to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they gravitate to machines and they gravitate to each other. And they're not very good at educating each other about social norms.
Yeah, no kidding. There's so many places I could go with this. One thing that's really popping into my mind is that the newfound responsibility that grandparents have when it comes to their grandchildren.
Yeah, that is really right on target. And there's a lot of activity out in the general population of not only grandparents raising their grandchildren, but being very concerned about the socialization that their grandchildren are exposed to and becoming much more active about spending time with their grandchildren and trying to instill in their grandchildren some of the values and the social norms that they grew up with. And so that's a good thing. But on some level, there aren't enough grandchildren and grandparents to go around.
Absolutely. What are parents accidentally doing today that you think might be causing more anxiety in their children instead of resilience?
They are overscheduling their children. It is so common today that every child has an after-school activity. It's an organized after-school activity. And for many children, after their after-school activity, they have another organized activity, right? They participate in a sport or two sports or three sports or in a chess group or some robot building group. They're organized to be in relationship with some kind of training experience all the time. So they have no downtime. They are highly pressured into performance situations. So they don't have the opportunity for internal reflection, which is powerful. They don't have the opportunity to get bored, which is also powerful and very important that you have that opportunity. There's no time for reflection, all right? There's no time for challenging yourself to take a deeper dive into who you are and what you want. Instead, you're following the routine and the prescription that's laid out by your parents. And that is because both parents are working. All right. So it's just a natural consequence. I want to have my child supervised. All right. And the way to do that is to put them into a group activity. I go by the park in my neighborhood, right? There are large groups of 3-year-olds learning to play soccer.
Wow.
Right. On the field, right? Mm-hmm. Large groups of 3-year-olds. It's bizarre to me.
Yeah, they must look so little running around.
Yeah, right, they do. But, you know, imposing that kind of structure, so there is no free play, and there's also no opportunity to get bored. There's value in getting bored. And we've taken that away from our kids, for sure. There's no time for reflection. They're busy constantly. So they're on the move and focused. They focus on this activity, then this activity. There's no time for personal reflection. And their emotional lives suffer as a result of that. All right. Mm-hmm. So they either get depressed or they get selfish. We're raising a whole system of very entitled, selfish children who believe that because they're performing, right, they deserve certain things, right? Mm-hmm. Could be devices, could be clothing, could be opportunities, but they feel entitled to, in essence, get paid for the work that they're doing. And I kind of don't blame them. Right? Mm-hmm. Because we are asking them to be on 24/7, right? You have to go to school for 8 hours, and then you have to do this after school activity, and then you have to do this other after school activity. And then right before bed, you can squeeze in your homework.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the world, it's difficult because the cost of living has increased. So, I mean, it's really difficult for parents. I feel like some families are stuck between a rock and hard place. Like they don't know what to do in order to feed their kids. So they both have to go to work. So
that
I can see where both sides of the coin, right? So what do? Right.
Yeah. So you do have to have someone responsible for your children, and you really can't afford to hire an individual to do that for you.
Right.
So you enroll them in activities, you pay a small fee for that, and maybe you have to buy some equipment, but in the long run, it's cheaper than hiring somebody to be your nanny.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So is that where these meltdowns are coming from? I see multiple children melting down in grocery stores, in airports, at the worst possible time. It's almost like they're like, oh, it's go time, so now I'm going to explode. Is that what this is about? Is because they're not getting their essential needs met?
Yep. I think you're right on target. All right. They are used to a go, go, go environment. And your example of the airport, all right, here's an increased stress experience for everyone, not just for the kids, but for everyone, right? To make sure that you get to that right gate at the right time, that you have all of your luggage, right? That you get through security without any glitches. So you make it to the gate. So you've got kids, you can load first on the plane. I mean, it's just a pressure cooker in an environment like that. And the child who already is used to a high performance environment, and you put them in a situation like that, and it's immediate overload. Adults break down in the airport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
So you have to expect that the pressure of, you know, getting to the gate on time and performing the way you're supposed to form in line, pay attention, don't cause any trouble, don't have any needs that are going to sidetrack us on the way to the gate. Not surprising that they will have a meltdown. We live in a very high pressure society, just tremendously high pressure. You'd be hard pressed to interview a family at this point and really find the time that everybody is just chilling out. It really isn't happening anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. We're seeing like four or five-year-old TikTok stars that are bringing in thousands of dollars and becoming affiliates for products. And it's
that is a lot of pressure.
Yeah, exactly. And other kids are seeing their peers doing that and think that that's what they should be doing too. So, so what do we do then? Like, what do children actually need emotionally to feel safe and confident and not fabricated, like genuinely safe and confident.
Well, I like your idea of involving the grandparent, right? They need time at grandparents' house, right? Where they're not pressured to perform or engage in activity, right? Where they can be calm, where they can take their time, where someone is really interested in getting to know them and will just move along with them, all right? We'll take a walk through the woods and just kind of be interested in what catches their eye. Not to educate them to name every flower out there, but just to be interested in, all right, so what catches your eye as we're moving along this path? Not performance oriented, but just enjoying your company. So grandparents are valuable for that. Just to spend time with you, enjoy your company, not have an agenda, not need you to perform, just be able to be safe and to be relaxed.
Even to empower them to make decisions, like something simple of you're choosing what we're having for dinner tonight.
That's right.
And that can make a young person feel so powerful and confident.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
So you've worked with families for decades. Do you
That's
have
right.
any stories or moments that have stayed with you all of these years?
I think there are tons of them. Some
yeah,
of them
I can
are
really
not
imagine.
So good. Some of them are not so good. And some of them are lovely, right? When a parent can get back in touch with their own childhood and remember the things that they longed for, then they can open themselves up to their own children, right? We are a driven culture. We want our children to advance beyond us, but it's also true that we all have histories that we can page back to and share with our grandchildren that are fascinating, right? That are interesting, that are challenging in some way, or that are funny. The other thing that's been missing more recently in family situations is humor.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is so busy and so focused on performance that there's no time just to be silly, relax, have fun, engage in laughter. So if I were, you know, in charge of the world, I would find time for families to just engage in having fun, being silly, enjoying laughter, right? Without any particular goal, without a desire for performance, but just because I enjoy your company and I want to spend time with you and I want you to know how much I enjoy you, that you could just mm-hmm. be delighted. And, you know, get silly sometimes mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, play is definitely one thing that children understand naturally and mm-hmm. adults most definitely lose along the way.
Right. And they are losing it now because of devices. Children are not playing, right? They're tapping on devices. They're not really engaging with the objects around them and figuring out how can I make use of this to entertain myself. Instead, I pull out a device and I'm punching on that and scrolling through all of the various screens on the device. And that is going to harm us long term.
Mm-hmm.
You lose a sense of creativity. You lose the ability to be curious and to discover and want to invent, want to try something new.
Mm-hmm.
If it's all laid out for me by AI, a game that I'm playing on the device, there's no opportunity for creativity or discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think with the pressure of the world, parents they're intervening way too quickly in terms of handling emotions. So they mm-hmm. want to protect their children because there's so mm-hmm. much noise out there. How do we teach our children to handle things like disappointment and failure and difficult emotions without trying to essentially come in and rescue them?
Yeah, I would say lately we are not teaching our children to handle disappointment. We are teaching them to fight back, right? And we're doing that in ways that we don't really appreciate the impact of it. So first grade and an assignment, the teacher points out that this is not right. And parents then get agitated that you have put my child down. Well, I will say to you, that's not putting your child down, all right? That's giving your child an opportunity to see that he or she was off track and to be curious about how do I get myself back on track? How do I get to the right place? How do I get to the right answer? We've taken that sense of children being curious away from them. And we told them, all right, that there's an accurate pathway for everything. That's what these devices do. The device says there's always an answer. There's always an accurate pathway. You just have to find the right way through this game or through this machine. But that's not true. There isn't always an accurate pathway in life. Sometimes we get hurt. Sometimes we get stopped. Sometimes we take a wrong turn and have to recover and come back in the other direction. But all of the devices that these kids are using are actually teaching a completely different approach to life, that there is a right answer, that you can find that right answer, and that you get rewarded every time that you find that right answer. And if you don't find the right answer, there's something wrong with you. But that's not true, right? We're losing the opportunity to help our kids explore and discover and invent new ways to approach something. And that is going to be harmful for us in the long run. We're losing the ability to really think for ourselves.
For sure. What is a small shift do you think that parents can make that might change the emotional atmosphere in the home?
Time. The shift is time. We are all so busy, so occupied, so on a schedule, right? The morning has to flow in exactly this way. You get up with the alarm at this time, you get yourself dressed, you get out to the bus or get in the car. Everybody is on a tight schedule. There is little to no downtime for our children. And there's no time for them to explore things on their own. And as human beings, we need time to reflect, right? To think for ourselves, to explore things without being guided in that exploration. We also need to make mistakes, right? It's even hard for a kid nowadays to actually make a mistake and be faced with a roadblock because we're finding, we're helping too much, finding all the ways forward for our kids and advocating for them to be special. I'm sorry, not everyone is special. There are a small percentage of people who are special, but the majority of us are not special, and we need to be more creative, right? We need to explore more for ourselves, and we need to embrace what our skill sets and talents are, but not always in competition with everyone else.
Yeah, the world's definitely shifting in terms of, if we're looking at like the workforce and the working world, it's definitely switching to more of a collaboration approach versus a hierarchical approach.
Right.
And so we need to start teaching our kids to encourage each other and work together and build together. Because jobs, AI is replacing so many jobs. And so now more than ever, we need our kids to be creative and to be able to utilize those skills, because they're going to need those skills in order to survive the new world, the way the world is shifting. Right. No one really cares about titles anymore. It's more of like, what makes you happy? What makes you light up? who are you as an individual? So it's about learning the self. It's becoming
the
so much more
popular.
The other
thing that I have heard from people in business is that AI is actually making work harder in the sense that you use AI and you can, let's say, develop a document, right? And it used to take you half a day to do the research and write that document. Well, now you can do it in 2 hours. Well, if you can do one document in 2 hours, then you can do another one in the next 2 hours and another one in the next 2 hours. And so suddenly your sense of work responsibility and work load increases. And that has an emotional impact on us. And we're not yet really looking at the emotional impact of the fact that, yes, AI is going to help me to do things faster, but then it's also going to put me in the situation of I should be doing more.
Right. The expectation
and more.
Now is in,
right.
Yes, because the we
expectation
have these tools that are so
ratchets
helpful.
Up.
So this is kind of a fun question, but what do you think is harder, parenting toddlers, teenagers, or adult children?
Oh, that's great. I would say they're all hard. Every last one of them is hard. And if you come into parenthood thinking that there is going to be an easy time, you're going to be really disappointed.
Right.
There is no easy time. All of them require a different set of skills, if you think about it, right? So when I'm parenting a toddler, first of all, physically, it's much more demanding to parent a toddler, right? They're small. You're tall.
I'm teaching my nephew how to skate over Christmas and my back was so sore.
Right. You're bending over all the
bending
time.
Over
you're
and he's hanging off my arm and he's on
time.
Skates.
Getting
and I'm
up
like,
and down
oh my
from
God.
The floor all the time.
Yep.
It's physically exhausting.
Exhausting.
Just to be around a toddler for a few hours. So to parent a toddler full time, it's a tough job physically, right? It's also a tough job emotionally, but at every stage, there's a challenge, right? So when you're in the elementary school before puberty stage, those kids are learning to interact with other people, all right? They're coming up against a variety of different personalities in the school, and they're having to figure out, how do I, A, keep myself safe? That is number one. How do I keep myself safe in this environment? And then how do I manage the variety of experiences that come at me in the course of the day? All right. This person next to me wants to tease me. This person on the other side of me wants to physically engage me. All right. This person behind me wants to make fun of me. All right. This person in front of me wants me to stop moving, stop talking, stop being. Right. So the elementary school age, there's all of this social pressure to figure out the variety of different people that I'm exposed to and where do I fit? How do I belong? And how do I find a connection with these people? They're different from me, but I need to find a connection because we're born connected to another human being. We spend our lives seeking connection. So in the elementary, middle school range, it is really all about social connection and figuring out my value in terms of social connection. And then we plunk them into adolescence, which is a completely different stage of life, right? And suddenly your body changes. You are not the same person. I had a friend describe her summer, one summer, and she said, I just laid on my bed and grew, right?
Good.
I went from 4 feet to 6 feet in a summer, right?
Wow.
It was like, wow, you're not the same person. So you have to get comfortable with your body again. And that's a real challenge, right? I live in this body, but it isn't me anymore. So I have to re-identify with my own body. And then I have to take this new me out into the social world. And once again, figure out connections in the social world. And now those connections will have a sexual implication to them
right.
as well, right? Because that's what's happening in adolescence, right? I reach puberty, my body changes, and I become sexually interested in another human being. So that's the connection that I'm going to make in adolescence. And then we could just, we kind of replay the whole thing again in adulthood. Because mm-hmm. when I graduate from high school or graduate from college, I'm lost again, right? I'm kind of a toddler again. I'm out in this new world and I have to figure out who everybody is, where I fit, what my value is, who likes me, who doesn't like me. You kind of start the cycle over again,
yeah,
if you will. Right. Then, you know, we get married, we have families. Well, here comes adolescence again. All right. Varieties of sexual interactions that we have, and then taking responsibility for raising our own children.
Mm-hmm.
It just keeps going. It's a very interesting cycle.
It is very interesting. And it's just the forefront of it all is like the mentorship of our parents or the people who raised us.
Right.
Like whatever our parents or caregivers are doing is what we're seeing and feeling and being around. And so that's
right.
our idea of what we think norm is the norm is going to be.
That's right.
So I think
that's
parents
right.
have a really challenging job because, yeah, everything
it
they're
is.
Doing is affecting the kids.
Yeah, it's a huge job. You might think of a parent as, you know, one of those big stage lights that's in the back of the theater aiming to something. So that is really the job of a parent. The parent is to bring light into the child's world and to facilitate their becoming something new and different. And it's hard to do that, right? And the child then only experiences the world that the parent presents to them.
Yeah, it's so important to be just really open and understanding and accepting. And
mm-hmm.
But how do parents do that and still like keep their boundaries?
It's hard. I think
yeah.
it is very difficult. And, you know, we see parents who burn out and the divorce rate is 50% or more.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of that is about parenting
mm-hmm.
and the difficulty in sharing the responsibility of making decisions and cooperating in raising children. I have not looked at the stats, but I venture to say that people who are married who don't have children probably have a longer span of marriage than people who have children, because children are challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Children test you all the time, and children will create disruption between the parents, disagreements over small things. You know, do you give the kid a second cookie after
mm-hmm.
dinner? I mean, people can have fights over that, whether you give
yeah.
the kid a second cookie after dinner or the trajectory, right? What activities do we enroll this child in? What do we require them to practice and learn, right? Are they going to be a Picasso? Are they going to be a Handel, right? Are they going to be a bum,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
right? There's this pressure as a parent that the things that I do will have a critical impact. And so I, as a responsible parent, am wanting to be thoughtful. But when I'm doing this in conjunction with another adult, we're not going to agree,
mm-hmm.
right? We're going to come to loggerheads about certain things. Some things we're going to agree on, hopefully. But there are going to be lots of places where we come to loggerheads, and then that creates this stress in the marriage relationship. And then think of the impact of divorce on the population of children that have been living with this now for
mm-hmm.
decades, right? A divorced child, a child of divorce, moves back and forth between two places 2, 3, 4 days at a time now. You told me when we started today that you're looking at going into a new home, right? Mm-hmm. Into a new place to live. How about we make you live in two places and you have to move back and forth between those two places every 3 or 4 days? Would you look forward to that?
That would be really challenging. I would feel like I was just getting settled and then would have to leave again.
That's right. And that's what we have done to our children. So we also now have this growing generation of children who are not interested in relationship.
I was just going to say, yeah, kids aren't getting married anymore.
People are not getting married anymore. And that's exactly why, because they don't have any settled sense of security in their own childhoods. And they have watched this film of hostility, discomfort, rancor happen over and over and over again in their week-to-week lives. And so they want to distance themselves. They want to isolate themselves. So that's not good for our culture.
No, they're terrified of love in a sense, mm-hmm. because they have never seen healthy love.
That's right.
Everybody, all parents are adults are children in a sense, mm-hmm. too, because everyone is still recovering from their own trauma from childhood.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're all the same in a sense. We're all children looking after children, children looking after children.
Right. That's right. That's a good way to phrase it. That's exactly what's happening.
So I know a lot of parents are listening right now and they are feeling scared or overwhelmed that they're getting it wrong. They're putting their IKEA furniture together and it's not working out well. What would you right. want them to hear? Their furniture being their children, of course.
Yes, of course. Well, you know, it is true that we are all in this pickle. A, you are not alone. So I encourage everyone, right, to get help. That doesn't always mean therapy, right? Sometimes that means develop a good friend, someone that you can confide in. And historically, that's much easier for women than it is for men, because we have trained men to shut off access to their feeling states. So it's difficult for them to disclose. And to those people, I would say, take a look at the numerous men's groups that are available all across the United States. This is one thing that the world has done in response to the way that we raise our boys. There are groups that have formed out there to facilitate emotional support and emotional growth for men. Find a men's group, participate in that. You will get education. You will hear wonderful speakers talking about parenting and talking about emotional growth, and you will develop transparent relationships with another male where you can bring a concern that you're having about your child or about yourself, and you can bring it into the group and you can discuss it openly, honestly, and you can get good support, good advice, good direction. So do yourself a favor and join a men's group.
Yeah, I love that. And I really love today's conversation. Thank you for being here and for being so open and honest about your views on some of the crises that we're experiencing in the world when it comes to our children and what to do about it and how to essentially save them. So thank you so much. Do you have any last minute thoughts that you want to share before we wrap up today?
I just would encourage everyone to take their emotional needs seriously. There is opportunity out there, right, for you to get the support that you need. And that support might be a group. That support might be individual therapy. That support could be, there are numerous books out there. Mm-hmm. On emotional growth, on parenting, get the support and the help that you need to take the next step of growth for yourself. And that will lead to another step.
Agreed. Amen to that. Thank you again, Gloria, for being here.
You're welcome, Lisa. Loved it.
Yeah. I also want to thank our wonderful audience for tuning in. We hope you found that really helpful and insightful. And if you have any comments that you want to leave, good or bad, if you want to challenge anything that you heard today, please do so. We welcome that in the comments. Yes. And this conversation was such a good reminder that raising thriving children isn't about being perfect. It's about being present. And so being open to presence. And we will make sure to have Dr. Gloria Vanderhorst's information in the show notes so you can check out her and her work and follow her and anything else that she might have on her website. So thanks everyone for tuning in and stay tuned for the next episode coming real soon. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Good luck with that IKEA furniture.